I feel this is a safe place, so I should like to preface what I'm going to say so that you know that these are not easy, banal words from someone cocooned in their ivory tower. In my 40-plus years as a minister, I've conducted around 2,000 funerals. That's 2,000 doors behind which are devastated, hurting, sometimes angry people, certainly all grieving. Those funerals have been of newborn babies, toddlers, teenagers, centenarians, sudden deaths, suicides, long lingering deaths, death by drowning, death by gunshot, people who drank themselves to death, drug addict overdoses, terrible accidents. There have been funerals in cathedrals, on lonely hillsides, at sea, funerals with hundreds present, funerals with one mourner. In my own life, I've conducted the funerals of my father, my mother-in-law and father-in-law, my brother-in-law, an uncle and aunt, a young cousin in her 40s. I've been a mourner at the funeral of my great-grandmother, two grannies, my grandpa, my stepfather, and my mother, my sister, and my wife, who died aged 63. We met in first year at university and we were married for 38 years. So none of what I say next comes easy. I've been in the dark valley many times, too many times to do trite. So here goes. If you were to believe the children of Primary One at our local primary school back in Scotland, the whole village is a graveyard. Under trees and gardens, beneath hastily constructed piles of stone, makeshift cairns lie the bodies of dead, loppy-eared rabbits, gerbils, hamsters, rodents various, cats, dogs, and I understand even a budgie called Joey. As they lay their pets to rest inside shoeboxes, children learn very early on the reality of mortality and the pain of loss. The inescapable fact of life, that to love is to lose. You can't sidestep reality. The realities of our human experience block the path every day, always. And you are deluding yourself if you think they're less real than they really are. Our pain is part of our physicality, a real physical existence in a real physical world. Sorrow is a given. None of us can bob and weave with sufficient agility to avoid this wounding. The equation is unmoving and unavoidable. Presence means the possibility of absence. Having has within it the very real possibility of not having. Mortality, it's written into the contract. We can't avoid it, we can only deal with it, find its meaning, place it within the context of the bigger picture. Even our tears are powerfully symbolic. Our tears meaning that we have loved. We have been involved to the very roots of our being with someone. Our personality has been reached at the raw, frayed edges of intimacy, and we have been enfolded, cared for, allowed to matter to someone. Relationships have taken us out of the narrow stranglehold of self-centeredness into a living and vivid connection with others. Someone else has etched their value and importance on our heart. And all of this, at the same time as it has enriched our experience, has made us inevitably, inexorably vulnerable. If someone matters to us, then we'll be profoundly blessed by that connecting of our life with their life, and the sorrow we feel at the loss of that connection is a monument to the love we've felt and enjoyed. Someone, someplace, something, invested with our emotional loyalty, grafted onto our heart, so that separation, short or long or permanent, rips at our emotions and tears at our sense of calm. There has been a huge blessing in the relationship, and the loving, the downside of which is loss. And in truth, we would rather endure that loss, that pain, run that risk, be that vulnerable, than stand aloof and untouched by any loyalty to place or person. We could exist in splendid isolation. I am a rock, I am an island, and a rock feels no pain, and an island never cries. But we prefer the place where we live rather than merely exist. We know there will be pain there, but we choose to belong, to share our heart, to relate. Now, all this is to think about loss and sorrow at the human level. But as Christian pilgrims, we want to know what part God has in all of this. What does it mean, this reality that we cannot deny, nor can we avoid? What does it mean for the Bible to assure us that God is with us even in the dark valley? How does it operate, this promise that sounds so marvellous, that nothing can separate us from the love of God, which is ours in Christ Jesus our Lord? What difference in real terms does it make for God to be with us? I suppose we have to begin with the assumption that somehow the whole thing was his idea in the first place, to give us this kind of life, this kind of world, this kind of humanity. He is the author of the whole astonishing tale, gives us a glorious dignity and worth in the unrestrained, full experience of a genuine, full-blooded humanity of a kind only possible when taking place in the context of a real universe. Clearly, it was the Creator God's idea to do it this way, this richness of possibility, this liberty of choice and action, where real moral and emotional responsibility can happen, and where the world has a logic and therefore a shape that makes humanness possible. This creative action is one of amazing courage and vision, as well as one of staggering risk, and has the presence of God infused through that creative purpose within creation for those with eyes to see and hearts to respond. So that in the true sense, as the backcloth against which we live the drama of our existence, there is the Creator God who holds it together because he chooses to allow us to be real people. And the revelation of the Bible makes it clear that God is not just the author of the physical world, but the giver of the powerful emotional universe that we all inhabit. God is the author of the emotional aspects of our humanity. Indeed, that emotional dimension is a further fingerprint and identifying hallmark of the Maker, who is, it is clear, himself, one who has feelings. The Bible is quite shocking in the emotional characteristics it challenges us to acknowledge as part of the character of God. Anger, sorrow, hurt, hope, compassion, tenderness, all in the Bible declared as integral to the nature of God and embodied in the personality of Christ. It seems that our capacities for emotional responsiveness are a pointer to God's personhood. Forget thinking of him as the great computer in the sky, some abstract force of mind power ruling the universe by logic. The heart of God is the crucial concept. It is his love, not his curiosity, that brings creation into being and gives us our life. This emotional element in the character of God, the God of the Bible, means that he feels things, and that puts him in touch with our crisis, our heart, our need. It's not that he cannot understand because he's a different sort of being. The full-scale miracle is that he understands perfectly, for he has made us in his image, and our capacities to feel pain and anguish are a reflection of his emotional commitment to us, getting close to our hurting. The Bible reminds us constantly of his ability to be wounded by our neglect, our betrayal, our indifference, his capacity for empathy, entering into our sorrow with understanding as well as compassion. You'll be aware how some people back off from being in church after a hard experience. They fear becoming too emotional. But if you can't let your heart be stirred in the deepest place while in church, where else can you? The music, the words of the hymns, the stillness of prayer, a loving smile, the touch of a hand, these are precious healing resources offered out of love and out of experience. There are people listening who know what faith dragged through the mill is all about, and they understand. They understand. Their ability to sing and serve and pray and stand with us is the ministry of God, without a shadow of doubt. And staying away from that welcome, that loving community, is a self-inflicted wound, a tragic loss. And of course, for centuries, Christians have been dealing with these issues in their writings, and there's another crucial resource through which God brings his grace and his presence. As we absorb the real-life lessons that other Christians have learned about where God is with them in the dark night of the soul, on a plane 3 days after my wife's funeral, reading A Grief Observed by C.S. Lewis, who writes with profound beauty and real faith about the death of his wife, I cried a lot, but I learned a lot. God is also with us, the Bible assures us, through the presence of his Spirit, loose in the world and in the hearts of his people, bringing us, as he promised, comfort and solace. And what does that mean in real terms? It means that when we seek him out and open our hearts to his approach, he will come to us, bringing comfort and strength beyond our own. When we open up the channels, when we throw open the doors of our need and the place of our hurting to his love and grace, he will be there. That is his promise. And it is the experience of those who have reached out to him in their urgent need. Ask, listen, bring your sorrow and invite him to journey with you, and his Spirit will do for you what he has said he will. I don't know how I would have come through it if it hadn't been that I got strength from somewhere, is a common testimony of those who've been surprised by joy, finding that they're not alone as they thought, but one is with them who both understands and comforts. There's always a danger of over-sentimentalising that truth. Perhaps it's been somewhat hijacked by the poster manufacturers with their footprints in the sand poster, but the reality is he keeps his word and he supports us. Mind you, this is not the promise of some kind of talismanic protection from all the bogeymen of life. If it were, everyone would be saying a big yes please to Christianity. There was a wonderful old lady I knew, Mrs. Grant, who taught me a lot about dealing with suffering and loss. She was badly crippled with arthritis over long years. Her beautiful, bright, only daughter died in her early 40s of cancer. And not many months after that tragedy, her husband died suddenly of a stroke. How to deal with it? How to keep faith in the throes of her cruel loss? Well, she said this to me, "Listen, Mr. Twaddle, if you could stand up in the pulpit on a Sunday and assure all the people in church that nothing bad would ever happen to them because they were, well, Christians and churchgoers, and if that was the case, then all the churches would be packed to the door every Sunday." But she said, "Faith isn't about that. Faith isn't about that." And she knew what she was talking about. We live in a world that is wonderful and glorious and tough, where those remarkable things called people are grown, where there are boundaries that won't be shifted, actions have consequences, choices have implications. If there is birth, there will also be death. That's the deal that allows us to be free, real human beings. And there are no free rides for the believers, no complimentary tickets for the men and women of faith. There is no diplomatic immunity for the Christian. There are just God's ultimate purposes being worked out, God's assurance of his presence, the reality of the Church of Christ endued with spiritual gifts of compassion, prayer, healing, friendship and listening. Being there for us when our hearts are breaking.